Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning. How are we doing today? Glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLIW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at WLIW.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. And remember, each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com and distributed on my podcast on Audio Boom and iTunes. Well, this is Players Championship Week in golf at TPC Sawgrass in Ponte Vedra, Florida. Many consider this PGA Tour stop the fifth major. Justin Thomas is the defending champion, and when I asked him about the advice that he received from his buddy, Alabama football coach Nick Saban, about defending his title here, here's what Justin Thomas had to say.
I know you recently played with Coach Saban, and he had said when you win a championship, you don't have to defend, just go and have fun. How much do those words resonate with you and your thought process this week?
It did a lot. And it's so true. I mean, you're obviously a defending champion, but I don't have to defend anything. I'm not defending this title. It's not, you know, the PGA Tour isn't going to come to my living room and take my Players Championship trophy from 2021 from me after this week. I mean, that's mine forever, and I don't have to give anything back, and my name's always going to be on that trophy. I'm just going to go try to win it again. That's all I'm going to try to do, and it was very – I was glad to hear him say that, but it was also funny to see the coach that I love to watch give interviews almost come out in them when they're like, you know, coach, you've defended a lot of titles and national championships. You know, what do you think is it going to be like for Justin? You could just see like his hands wanting to get into it, like he's not defending anything kind of thing. And it was funny to watch. But I am very glad that he said that because it definitely resonated well with me.
PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan gave his annual State of the Game address early in the week at the Players Championship. And, you know, there's so many issues off the course that have the entire golf world talking. The Saudi Golf League threat is just one of those issues. And here's what Commissioner Monahan had to say about that.
The PGA Tour is moving on. We have too much momentum and too much to accomplish to be continuously distracted by rumors of other golf leagues and their attempts to disrupt our players, our partners, and most importantly, our fans from enjoying the tour and the game we all love so much. I am grateful for the strong support our top players have shown recently and publicly, and I'm extremely proud that we've turned the conversation around to focus on what we do best. Delivering world-class golf tournaments with the best players to the best fans, all while positively impacting the communities in which we play. We are, and we always will be, focused on legacy, not leverage.
Of course, Phil Mickelson's controversial comments about the PGA Tour, about Saudi Arabia, and his role in the Saudi Golf League and the fallout that ensued from those comments prompted Mickelson to take a break from golf. Issues such as transparency with the PGA Tour and the fact that they don't disclose or discuss whether or not players are suspended, that came up in the press conference with Commissioner Monahan as well. In this show, you'll hear my conversation with Mark Canizzaro, sports columnist for the New York Post who covers golf, and we discuss the many issues that are taking place in golf these days off the course, and we discuss Commissioner Monahan's press conference as well. And on a lighter side, recently I visited with actor Don Most, most known for his role Ralph Mouth in the TV hit series Happy Days. Don has been very busy working as an actor and a musician ever since, and he loves to play golf when he can squeeze it in. You'll hear my conversation with Don Most in the second part of the show. Hope you enjoy Sports Interview with Ann Liguori. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori, and my guest is Mark Canizzaro, sports columnist with the New York Post. Mark, always great to catch up with you.
How you doing, Ann? Thanks for having me.
We're at the Players' Championship, and of course, Commissioner Jay Monahan had his State of the Game address early in the week, and interesting. Just your overall thoughts about his comments.
Well, he was very aggressive right out of the chute, obviously. I mean, he addressed the Saudi league situation, in his opening comments. So he came there with an agenda. He came there to be tough about it, and his theme was, you know, we're moving on. Now, you know, he might be moving on, but I don't think the Saudis are moving on. But he's dealing in strength and numbers right now, Ann, because, you know, they've had a lot of most of the top players. I don't want to say a lot, but really most of the top players have come out in support of the tour with this Greg Norman, you know, kind of fronted Saudi group knocking on the door a little bit. You know, you've had Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy has been against it the whole time, but Koepka, DJ, Colin Morikawa. Justin Thomas. I mean, you go down the line, and it's gotten to the point where at least kind of the optics at this point are that there's really nobody left amongst the top players to go to the Saudi thing, you know. So the other thing was interesting that he addressed, which a lot of us had questions about, was Phil Mickelson, obviously. You know, the PGA Tour, which in my opinion is not a good policy, does not disclose disciplinary stuff, suspensions, etc., like every other sport on the planet does, essentially. So there's been some speculation as to whether maybe Phil Mickelson has been suspended or not. I don't believe he has, but the way Jay spoke yesterday, he kind of left the door open that he is. And although I don't, as I said, I don't believe that is the case. You know, for our listeners, obviously Phil came out with an apology and a statement for some things that he said, you know, derogatory things he said about the tour, calling obnoxious greed, etc., and had some comments that he thought was a private conversation come out with a writer that was really trashed the tour and the Saudi group. So he's dealing with a bit of a maelstrom right now, obviously. But listen, I mean, these commissioners, State of the Union things, as you know, you and I have both covered multiple sports, you know, the commissioners are always going to paint, you know, rosy pictures, right? And we're strong and we're moving on and we're going to do more growing in the next 10 years than we've done in the last 20. That was a lot of his message, you know, during that get-together.
Yeah, interesting. I thought he handled himself pretty well with all the issues facing golf off the course right now. But interesting, right before the commissioner came into the press conference room, Rory McIlroy was asked to give him a report card. And Rory said the PGA Tour could do a better job at its transparency. He said he's always felt that the bans and suspensions should be more apparent, which I agree. You cover all sports. This is the only sport where they don't announce bans or suspensions. Give us some context what the other sports do, Mark.
Well, I mean, the teams and the leagues make announcements. You know, I cover a lot of NFL. So if an NFL player has, say, failed a drug test or something like that, you know, they'll announce that player is suspended for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, half a year, whatever it may be. You know, I mean, we've seen baseball bans. You know, it's just, you know, what's the interesting dynamic to this, and to some degree, is because all of these leagues and sports, and certainly including golf, very much so golf, they're all in bed with the gambling companies now, right? So, you know, that brings to play, you know, to some degree, you know, people want to know if Phil's playing, you know, even though it isn't an independent contractor element to it, it's different and players make their own schedules. You know, there are people in Las Vegas that may want to bet Phil at the Masters. Well, they don't really know if he's going to be at the Masters because none of us really knows, right?
Could be one of the bet. Will Phil play the Masters? I'm sure it was and is.
Yeah, that may well be. That's a good point. But, yeah, that element really brings into play, you know, if somebody, you know, there's a few years ago where DJ, Dustin Johnson, there was speculation that he potentially might have gotten suspended for some sort of drug use or, you know, banned substance use. And because he was away for a while, but nobody ever announced it, and it was kind of a wink, wink thing. And I think in that case, I think he was suspended. But nobody really knows for sure. But again, if you're a gambler in this day and age now, and as I said, I mean these gambling companies are in business with the PGA Tour, and the NFL and everybody else, the sport. And, you know, people want to know if so-and-so's playing, if they're going to parlay or do whatever they're going to do. You know, they make their advance wagers and stuff. So, yeah, and I just think the transparency, you mentioned it, you referred to it with Rory's quote, was a bit of the buzzword of the day, or those couple of days, I should say, when we were speaking to players about the tour. Rory is on the tour's player advisory council called the PAC. So these guys have a problem with the fact that the tour is not transparent, maybe about their financials or other things. And, you know, Rory specifically referenced, you know, suspensions, which was interesting, I thought. It's funny, the only people that probably are against having those suspensions announced by the tour are the people that are getting suspended, right? But, you know, then again, they have to answer a million questions, too, if they're out. And, you know, so, yeah, it's a weird dynamic, and I don't know why the tour does it. I suspect it will change eventually because I think there's enough pushback now from the players.
Interesting, the exchange when Jay Monahan was told of Rory's statement. He said, what, really? He said that? He said, I would just say, effective immediately, Rory McIlroy is suspended. And then he laughed, and then he's brought up the point that he is a member of the policy board and that it's something that they're going to really have to talk about in their player advisory council meetings, et cetera, et cetera. But ironically, the tour has done so much to protect the players, and they've thrown so much money at the players. And do you think it's a direct result of the Saudi league?
I absolutely do. There's no question about it. Listen, I mean, the tour is going to grow and sponsorship money comes in. But I think so incrementally each year that, you know, the purses have grown and whatnot. But they've grown at a much more rapid pace than they probably normally would have had it not been for the threat of the Saudis and this league. There's zero question in my mind. And, you know, there's a lot of players that are out here who have a problem with the tour. And I think it's part of Phil Mickelson's issue with the tour. Because he's kind of out front on a lot of this stuff. The feeling is that the tour doesn't really throw the players a bone unless they got a gun to their head, so to speak. And then when they do, they're moved to do so, but they're kind of, they throw crumbs out there. Now, I mean, for me to say crumbs, you know, the money that's out there is not crumbs for us. It's money we can't even fathom, right? I mean, the tour had that player impact program, right? It was a $40 million deal. Tiger Woods didn't strike a ball all year last year, and he was handed, you know, an $8 million bonus for that. Phil was in second place with $6 million. So, and that's actually also a very interesting dynamic because you have a lot of players that are pushing back on that. I know I'm kind of spinning into a different topic a little bit, but, you know, Patrick Cantlay, for example, you know, one of the, top-ranked players in the world, two in the world, I believe.
And so articulate. He's so smart.
Fantastic. Same thing, Colin Morikawa. I mean, but these guys are not social media mongers, right? They're not huge self-promoters as some of these guys are. And because of that, they're not even in the mix for this. Now, as I believe it's been reported that Morikawa ended up, Morikawa, I think it's number two in the world, if I'm not mistaken, as we sit here. And he finished 11th in the PIP program and only the top 10 cash, right? So, I mean, you know, how's he feeling about that? He's played better golf. You know, he's won two majors, right? And he's played better golf than most of these guys that are cashing these checks. So that is an interesting dynamic. Cantlay, who is so articulate and really a terrific interview, he's been very, very candid about the fact that he feels like the tour should use that money a different way, you know, reward the players that are, you know. I mean, there's an interesting – I like Patrick Cantlay, but people are not lining up to see Patrick Cantlay play because he's a lower key dude, and he's just kind of a. I mean, you want to go see great golf, you're gonna go watch Patrick Cantlay, but
he's not a personality yet. Maybe he will never be because he doesn't choose to be. He wants to stay in the background, and I think the player impact program is ridiculous. Honestly, it's just, you know, does Tiger need $8 million? An additional $8 million, and as you say, didn't hit a ball because he's Tiger. People are following him on social media and all their analytics, how they decide who wins this and who falls in the top 10. The money should go to charity. The money should go somewhere else.
Or use it to help the second tier, you know, the Korn Ferry, make those purses bigger, you know, so those guys can make a better living, you know, than the scratch that they're doing, they're making now. Yeah, Tiger probably lost that $8 million in his couch cushions, you know, the week after he got it, right? So, yeah, there's a lot of ways. I do understand, you know, because these guys, you know, the player impact guys do sell the tour. I mean, Bryson DeChambeau is a draw, you know. Kepka's a draw. Phil's
Yet I was
draw.
Surprised, Mark, that with the banter going back on social media between Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau, that they weren't higher up in the rankings there.
Well, I think what you saw there, Ann, is first of all, Tiger is Tiger. I mean, nobody other than Jack Nicklaus, who was around before there was social media or cell phones or even, you know, he was around when there was a dial-up phone, right? What do you call it? Rotary.
We forgot what they're called.
Rotary. I was going to say, I actually forgot what it was called, rotary dial. You know, Tiger's Tiger. So, I mean, if you remember when he was kind of just about to start, before he played the father-son event, and he put that three-second video out on Twitter about hitting balls with the comment making progress. I mean, that almost blew up the internet, right? So, and Phil remains one of the most popular players on the planet. So it's not a huge, and he's also very active on social media. Tiger's not that active on social media, but he picks his spots, and when he does, it's impactful. So yeah, those two players are still the two biggest names in the sport. You know, and obviously Bryson is catching up and Koepka is catching up. And, you know, there's a lot of people that thought that the whole Bryson Koepka thing was, you know, was almost manufactured to, and I think some of it probably was just to kind of rile up, you know, some points within the player impact. Right. So, yeah, I'm not against it, but I do feel like there can be different metrics to it. Because I think the tour is figuring, oh, well, you know, the guys make enough money with the purses. Well, you know, is it really fair to Patrick Cantlay and Colin Morikawa, who are clearly better players than Tiger and Phil were in the last year, that they are not even getting a sniff of that money? It's probably not fair, right? But I understand where it's coming from, and it's going up, I think, to $60 million in 2022, or in the current year we're in right now. And so those numbers will go up, and I don't know if they're changing the metrics or not. But yeah, it's I'm kind of amused by it because the money, again, the money is ridiculous. I mean, even the guys that finished 10th are cashing $3 million, $3.5 million. So,
but again, a direct result, as I agree with you, you know, with the threat of this Saudi golf league, that it's so bizarre that we've been hearing about this league for a couple years now, and then obviously Phil brought it more into, you know, the limelight recently with his comments. But you've known Phil for a long time. You consider Phil a good friend, right? What do you think's going on with him?
I have a theory here, and if you look back at what I refer back to when he really invoked change with the Ryder Cup, the Tom Watson year. He came out and right in literally the Sunday night press conference of the Ryder Cup, and essentially spoke what every player in the team room felt was that Watson should never have been a captain, right? I mean, he's an amazing player, he's a legendary figure in the game, but he was, you know, he had no connects with these players, right? And he was really just a product of the system that PGA of America had put together to pick captains, which was kind of the good old boy network thing, right? So Phil, he knew he was the bad guy there. I had conversations with him afterward, you know, the week after I spoke to him, and I was like, man, that was harsh. And he goes, look, I knew I was going to get killed for that, but if I say what I say 6 months down the line, even 3 months down the line, there's no impact whatsoever. And so Phil was very much a part of that whole, changing of the way they, you know, I'm vapor locking on the name of, they had a name for it.
The pod system?
No, it wasn't the pod system. That was Azinger. Anyway, I'll come up with it as we talk, but it was essentially, it gave the players more of a voice, and it was really what it was a kind of a knockoff, they were taking a little bit what the Europeans do, which is have a succession plan. Former, even like the past captains then become assistant captains, and it's a very, very you know, it involves everybody. It's very inclusion.
But, Mark, to say it, to put, you know, the Captain Watson under the bus, we were at that press conference. The European team is there. They want to celebrate. It was live. It was just so just crazy that he publicly would do that. But you were going to say that seems to be the trend.
And task force was the words I was looking for. Okay, so Phil came up along with some other players, Tiger, Ricky Fowler was involved, Davis Love, Jim Furyk. They came up with kind of this task force concept. And this obviously came after the, you know, change with that aggressive approach. And spinning it forward to what's going on now, I believe, and this is just my theory, this is not coming from any inside information, I feel like he wants to see change on the tour. That whole transparency issue is a big deal for him, the stuff that Rory talked about, you know, at the Players. And I feel like he took this on and has taken this on in a little bit in the same way that he took on the PGA of America and their whole Ryder Cup system, feeling he was going to be, okay, I'm going to be the bad guy, but I'm going to invoke change. Now, I mean, listen, his comments that came out to Alan Shipnuck, those were never, I mean, the problem is those are being attached to him and they're, that's all anybody focuses on. He didn't want those out, obviously. You know, that was what he thought was a private conversation. It wouldn't have made any sense for him to want that out because essentially sabotaged everything he's trying to accomplish in battling the tour for what he wants, you know, but so that is really, that's kind of overwhelmed the bigger picture for what he was trying to fight for. But the bottom line is, I feel like he's taken this thing on. He's gone a little bit off the rails, and this is a much bigger thing that he's fighting than the Ryder Cup and the PGA of America and a once every 2 year event. Right? This is the PGA Tour, which is a big bad tour with a lot of backing and a lot of money and a lot of power, and it's blown up in his face. Really.
When Commissioner Monahan was asked about it, about Phil, he said the ball is in Phil's court. And again, you mentioned we don't know if he was suspended. I personally don't think he was. I think this is a self-imposed break that Phil feels he needs, right? But what do you think the next move is? Do we see Phil at Augusta?
I have a hard time not seeing him at Augusta. And I don't know whether he's going to be there or not. I've discussed it with some colleagues of mine. You know, what does Augusta want him parachuting in, you know, and then having the big press conference? And obviously he was going to be peppered with questions about what's taken place in the last month. Or does he, you know, play the week before Augusta, get that press conference out of the way? You know, Phil likes to play his way into majors. That's his way. But we're talking about a short amount of time, too. We're only talking about 3 weeks now, right? So I don't know what's going to happen, but it's, you know, if he's not suspended, which I don't believe he is, and even if he were suspended, and I refer this to the column I wrote about it, you know, technically speaking, the Masters is a PGA Tour event. It's under the umbrella of the PGA Tour. But as you and I both know from being there, you know, the powers that be at Augusta National, they walk to their own beat, okay? They don't really walk to Jay Monahan's beat or anybody else's beat. So, and Phil is a three-time past champion there, and as you know, they have a reverence for their champions there. I mean, listen, Tiger Woods landed there after his, you know, his scandal, and essentially was scolded in a press conference by Billy Payne, which I thought was wildly inappropriate, by the way. But I guess I use that as an example because that's an example of they do what they want to do. And I have a hard time believing that they don't want Phil there. Phil's one of the most popular players in the game and a past champion. And in Phil's mindset, too, he's 51 years old. He only has a handful of times, maybe no more times, but in his mind, maybe he thinks he can win this the next year or two. That's his window. Certainly he knows that the window's closing, if it hasn't already closed. But he feels comfortable enough at Augusta where he thinks he can win. I can't see him giving up one of those opportunities right now. You know, it's not like he's saying, all right, I won't come when I'm 54. This is when he's 51. And maybe in his mind, this is his last chance, to potentially win a fourth green jacket.
And after that magical win at the PGA Championship, his legacy was golden, right? Do you think he can rehab his image to kind of get it back to where it was? I mean, Tiger did.
Listen, if Tiger did, then why can't Phil? Because that was a whole, you know, Tiger's thing, in my opinion, in my eyes, which much more, you know, damaging, and I don't even know what the right words are for it, right? I mean, Phil did not break a law, okay? As far as we know, he didn't cheat on his wife. As far as we know, he didn't cheat his fellow competitors in a PGA Tour event. You know, he stated an opinion, and frankly, even those words that he said to Alan Shipnuck, he stated the truth, right? I mean, I'm not sure that many of us don't feel kind of the same way about what goes on, you know, with the Saudis and the atrocities that have taken place there. And it's not just Saudi Arabia, by the way, too. I mean, and that's another whole other can of worms, too. The PGA Tour is in bed in China, too, okay, by the way, but Saudi's not okay, but China's okay.
Right.
But he did then say, Mark, that despite all that, he wrote the operating agreement for the Saudi League.
Well, I mean, I think he was part of it, you know. But listen, there's no denying that he's involved in that. But, oh, by the way, half of the PGA Tour's top rank and file have been, they've all signed non-disclosure agreements. These guys are all waiting in line to see who's going to sign the paper first. And once one guy did it, the next guy was going to do it. The next guy was going to be. That's the way it was going to happen. Okay, you know, these guys are. I'm going to tell you right now. I mean, Norman and those Saudi, they were very, very cocksure about the fact that they had, because I've spoken. I've been involved, not involved with the league, but I've been privy to their plan, myself and a handful of other, and I had to sign a non-disclosure agreement.
You did?
Yes, and as did some other writers. There were five other writers that were involved in New York City back in the fall when they mapped it all out. Norman was there. I heard the whole thing. It was a fascinating concept. I think the team. Again, we're going. I know I'm rambling, but I think the team element is something that will draw younger viewers in. I think it's a good concept, right. But. Here nor there, I spun out of control there a little bit off, but I think the problem is that Phil is the face of this because he's publicly been outed, so to speak, as the face of it, and he hasn't denied that. He's actually said it, but don't think that DJ and Brooks and DeChambeau and the other top players have not been involved in conversations with these guys. And there, I'm a skier. I love to ski, right? So I've equated this to myself and three or four other friends standing at the top of a double black diamond, you know, mogul, narrow run, intimidating, dangerous look, right? I'm waiting for you to go, see how you go. Are you going to crash into the trees or whatever? You're going to face plant off a mogul or whatever?
That's a pleasant thought. Thanks, Mark.
Well, not you specifically, but that to me is a really good analogy about what's been taking place with the Saudi League. All these guys are waiting for the other guy to put it on in ink first, right?
But the PGA Tour wouldn't let him back, so why would they take that chance?
Well, we don't really know whether legally they can hold them back or not. I can tell you from being around the Norman group and that Live Enterprise group that they are quite certain that the PGA Tour legally cannot hold those players to that. And frankly, I think at the end of the day, when this is all said and done, this is going to end up in court in some manner because some players are eventually going to go over and play. I mean, I don't think that Saudi League is going away. I do not. I think it's been wildly damaged by all these top players, you know, professing their allegiance to the PGA Tour. But these people have too many powerful people in place. They've spent too much money. I don't think they're just going to wither away. And I do think at some point they're going to push the envelope, and there's going to be something in the courts. It's going to go to the courts. The lawyers are going to end up being the winners because they're going to have a lot of billable hours, essentially. But, I mean, the PGA Tour... Listen, I'm not a lawyer. Obviously, I don't even play one on TV or on your broadcast. But you know, the golf is a you know, these guys are independent contractors, and I don't know what the bylaws are. The tour, you know, Jay seems to be confident that the bylaws state that these guys can't go play elsewhere unless they get permission. But I don't think as a layperson, I would question that. You know. Listen, the tour didn't want these guys to go play the Saudi in International, you know, earlier the year, right? And those guys went and played anyway, permission or not. And they were supposed to get permission. the tour kind of looked the other way, you know. So I, you know, what happened there, right? So I don't. We haven't heard the end of this. Let's put it that way. But I do think the tour is very strengthened and emboldened by the fact that, you know, the DJs and the Brysons and JTs and Colin Morikawa's of the world, and John Rahm, forgot John Rahm, number one in the world, you know, they've all professed their allegiance to the tour, you know, as Tiger did too. He said that's where my legacy is going to be.
Mark, when you signed that agreement in the fall, why didn't they want you to promote it?
They want, I've wrote stories about it, so it wasn't really about, not. First of all, I'm not there to promote it, but I did write stories about Norman's involvement, but the non-disclosures were more about the team element, which, frankly, stuff got leaked, so, I mean, you know, everybody's, you know, agents are leaking, you know, the team element, all that stuff, very well thought out, you know, and I think will draw eyeballs, you know, the TV, they had it all set up, right, but at the end of the day, you know, no, I don't want to mention players' names to be offensive, but, you know, the guy that's ranked 130th in the world, you know, I'll use Jason Kokrak as a, you know, he's a very good player, but he's come out and actually said he's, you know, he's interested. You know, and, you know, why wouldn't he go make that money? Jason Kokrak is not drawing eyeballs to the Saudi, the Greg Norman League, right? You need star power, and I asked that a number of times at Norman. He said, "No, we've got players. We got them lined up. We're going to announce it soon." Well, soon kept getting the can kept getting kicked down the curb or whatever they're saying is. And as we sit here speaking right now, they have not announced anything, right? So that's been an issue for them. And obviously the Phil thing is, you know, was very damaging, you know, as has, you know, the parade of players that have now, you know, pledged their allegiance to the tour. So it's going to be something to follow. I do believe at some point it's going to end up in the court, you know, in some manner. Because I don't – obviously also we didn't even mention Norman came out with an open letter to Jay, obviously last week, I believe it was, essentially saying, you know, you can't hold your player, you know, this is, you know, these are independent contractors. You can't hold them to banning them, you know. So I'll believe it when I see it, when I see a player banned. Let's put it that way.
To be continued, Mark Nazero. This is fascinating, and it's all issues and topics that are taking place off the golf course.
Yeah, it's weird. It has nothing to do with ball struck at all, right? And you know what? The game carries on.
It's all very compelling. Thanks so much, Mark. I appreciate your insight, and we'll talk at the Masters.
Thanks, Ann. Appreciate it.
Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to Don Most, president of Mad Mac Productions, actor, director, singer, and you know Don for his role as Ralph Mouth on the TV series Happy Days, but boy, you've done so much since then, Don. Welcome to Sports Interview.
Oh, thanks, Ann. Great to see you again, and thanks for having me on.
And you're a passionate golfer, and we're going to get into your passion for golf in a minute. But
okay. First,
let's talk. Obviously, your last year on Happy Days was a long time ago, back in, I think, 1980. But you've been so busy since then, both with acting and your musical career. Talk about what you've been up to.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, it's been, yeah, I mean, I can't believe how long ago Happy Days was. And there's been a lot of work done since then. Especially, it's funny, in the last 2-3 years, I think I've been busier than I've been, you know, since back in those days, and which I love. I've been doing a lot of independent films, some really interesting projects where I get a chance to play all different kinds of characters, which is what I love. You know, and that was one of the hard things when I left the show, Happy Days, because, you know, you're so associated with the character and you get typecast and all that. But I kept knocking, you know, plugging away, knocking at the door with some new different roles and on TV and film and theater. And I think getting older has opened it up for me, because I obviously I'm not quite in the age bracket to play what I did back then. So I did a film called Lost Heart, which is on Amazon Prime. And I won a really nice award, best actor in a supporting role in a film at it was at a big festival in Orlando, actually. I was back there in May. It was a big film festival. And then I have another film called Man's Best Friend, MBF, which is also on Amazon, a very pretty heavy film. I play a defense attorney representing a wounded vet. And it's a pretty powerful film. And that's on Amazon. And I also did a film that's coming out pretty soon, sometime this year, called County Line, No Fear. I play kind of a career criminal in that one. Tom Wopat is in that, and Casper Van Dien, and some other wonderful talent. And then I did a film called Cult Cartel, where I went in Lost Heart from playing a local small town pastor to Cult Cartel, where I play a polygamist. And I really enjoy, all of the diversity and all that. So that's been great. And I also just did talking about Florida, I just did a play called Middletown, a new play down in Coral Gables in Miami.
And, wow, you don't stop. You are busy. My goodness.
Yeah, and that's not including all the music, which I've been doing, which I've loved.
I want to ask you about your music career in a second, but first of all, everybody wants to talk about Happy Days, right?
Sure.
Do you ever get sick of talking about Happy Days? And
No, not really. You know, there probably was a time when, you know, back in when the show was number one and you know, there were only three networks. There was no cable. There was no internet. So back in those days, and I was doing a lot of interviews, sometimes it got a little bit, you know, it was like the same thing over and over and over. But I was still always appreciative and, you know, and very grateful for it. Now, I enjoy talking about it because I have a different perspective, maybe a little more mature, even wiser perspective on it now. So I enjoy talking about it, and people love the show and love to hear about it.
What were some of your more memorable moments from filming Happy Days?
Oh boy, you know, people ask, you know, do you have any favorite memories? And there were so many, you know, so hard to pick one. The thing I remember most is just loving the terrific relationship we all had working together, the cast, we were very close. So all of those moments, not only filming, but in between filming, the fun we had, the laughs, the great discussions, you know, Ron and I would have discussions about movies, you know, he wanted to go on to become a director, and this was before then, but we'd go see films together and discuss film. We even made a film together so he'd have something to show that he could direct. And he asked me to work on a film with him and star in it. And so those are great memories. And with not only the cast, but our incredible creator, exec producer, Gary Marshall, who was a comic genius, and Jerry Paris, our director. I have such incredible, Jerry became, was like my uncle. He was my best man at my wedding, Jerry Paris. So that's how close we were. And those are the things I remember most, and the collaboration that we had. We had such wonderful, creative, collaborative energy.
Do you still see Ron Howard, who obviously played Richie Cunningham back then, and Henry, yeah, Winkler, Fonzie? Do you see those guys?
I do, you know, not as often. I just, Ron and I just emailed each other just a few days ago, and Henry and I did as well. So, but I haven't seen them in a while. I'd love to catch up in person, so I'm hoping to. But who I do see all the time is Anson Williams, who played Potsy. And he and I are best friends. And we talk three, four times a week and see each other maybe almost once a week, you know. I'm probably going to see him tomorrow night. So it's great. And I still get to see Mary, love to get in touch base with Marion Ross, you know, who lives only about 20 minutes from me. So it's great to catch up with Marion as well. So, it was, you know, it was like family. So, excuse me, you can go a year without, 2 years without seeing someone, but you see them and it's just like old times, you know.
How difficult was it for you back then to get other major acting roles? Were you somewhat typecast from your character on Happy Days back then, Don?
Yeah, well, I alluded to that just before. It was pretty difficult. The typecasting thing was even more prevalent back then, I think, because as I mentioned, there were only three networks. So you had so many people. We had 50, 60 million people watching us on Tuesday nights. You know, today there's so many different choices of channels and platforms, streaming, cable. So back then, yes, you got very identified with the character, but more so with the industry. The public, I actually felt, was open to seeing me in other things back then. But the industry plays it kind of safe, and they don't want to take chances as much. Now, in today's world, you know, people who are doing TV shows move into doing films, and people who are doing films are doing TV, and it's back and forth. Back then, it was kind of like separate, and there seemed to be more of a typecasting, a proclivity towards that. But like I said, I kept knocking away. I started doing some independent films where I had some interesting roles. I did a film where I played a retired baseball player who was kind of a semi-alcoholic, alienated with his son, and called The Yankles. And then I did another one where I played sort of this, some strange characters in a thriller. It was a film called Follow. And I mentioned more recently Lost Heart, where I play a pastor, and then Man's Best Friend, where a defense attorney. So it's really opening up. I even went to the Czech Republic last year to play a king in this really cool, almost like a Princess Diaries kind of movie. I love all that. And a lot of theater in between. During the years, I did the Broadway tour of Greece, and then a play called, so many plays. And I fairly recently did The Sunshine Boys with Robert Wool. And Middletown, a new play I've been recently doing. So I'm really thankful, you know, that I've been able to continue doing what I love, and that more and more roles. To me, I feel like I'm in a new phase where it's opening up in a way that I've been hoping for a long time, and I'm wanting it to continue. And I almost feel like the best is yet to come. I really do.
I love that attitude. I feel the same way. I always say, the best is yet to come. And It's so great to see how you were able to make the transition from that popular TV series. And now you're doing such a variety, not only in acting, but in music. But with all of this going on, how do you have time for golf?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's the only problem. There was about a year and a half where I really didn't have time, and fairly recently. And that was the longest, I think I went like a year without playing a round of golf, and that had never happened. Since I started playing when I was about 28, 29, and I'd never go more than like probably, 5-6 weeks without playing, and that would be a lot. But that to go a year was crazy. But I was so busy that it was okay. But now things have quieted down for a little while, so I've been able to get back out there. Played, 4 or 5 rounds in the last 6 weeks, so that's pretty good. And getting out on the range more, so I love, I missed it. I realized just how much I missed it, and I'm so happy to see that the passion for it hasn't waned, because it's funny. When I was young, baseball was the huge sport for me. I was an avid baseball fan and would play, growing up, Little League, Babe Ruth League, all that, and loved it. And golf was not really in my radar at all. But when I turned 28 and I got married and I started getting invited to these celebrity tournaments, and then I got hooked, really hooked on the game. But the funny thing is now I'm at a place now where I lost interest. I wasn't following baseball and lost in all the other sports, but golf No way. I still watch the tournaments every week, and I love to go and play. I mean, I never would have thought that that, you know, I always, baseball would have been it for me. But here I am where, you know, the main sport that I watch is golf. You know?
Why do you think you're so passionate about golf? What is it about the game that, you know, basically has kept your interest through the years?
I you know, it's such an incredible game. To me, I always talked about how I think it's almost a metaphor for life. You know, I'm sure a lot of people have spoken about that, but it seems to be like an analogy. There's so many things that happen on a golf course that you can relate to in your life and say, you know, dealing with this kind of adversity and how do you handle it, and under the pressure, when the pressure's on, how do you deal with it? You know, when you get a bad break, which happens in life, you know, I mean, there is this luck, or you making your own luck, and the concentration and the focus that you need, but also the relaxation. And I think for me, it's the same thing that I feel I need to perform at my peak as an actor or a singer. You have to have great focus and concentration, but you have to be relaxed at the same time and finding that right sweet spot, you know. And I think you could see the pros, they're constantly trying, you know, that's where they want to be, in that zen kind of place, and so that they never get too excited or too this, and so it's that challenge. And then the beauty of being out there, you know, and it's so serene, and you know, being with nature, it's just so it's so relaxing and a nice escape. And so it's all of that. And then the challenge within yourself of trying to be your best, you know, it's competing with yourself to a large degree. And because I'm so a little bit overly analytical. And again, in golf, that could be a bad thing. And in life, that could be a bad thing. So it's teaching me sometimes how to deal with that.
I know I'm an A type personality. So my biggest challenge is just kind of switching off from that, you know, overactive mindset to being relaxed and focused and kind of get away from all the distractions. It's a real exercise in focus. Yes. And just the whole mental game intrigues me about golf.
Yes, because it is such a mental game. I was just talking to my wife about that last night, and I've spoken about it with her before. But you know, there's not so many other sports. You know, your athletic instincts, because you're reacting to something. But in golf, nothing happens until you initiate it. So you don't have that. You know, athletes can utilize their talent when they react to the thrown pitch or the ball in the air, or you know, whatever it might be, the tennis ball, and then it's pure sort of your athletic reaction time and hand-eye coordination and all that, that is, you know, it's not coming from your brain, it's just coming from somewhere else. But in golf, you know, you're not reacting, so a million things can happen before you take that club back, you know.
Right, but the challenge is, even though you're initiating it and you're in control, so many things seem out of your control once you hit the ball, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or even before you hit the ball.
Yeah, that's it. It's really just leading up to taking that club back. And gosh, you know, the amount of negative things that could go through your brain. That's what, you know, I was watching the tournament last night, and it was the one at Riviera, which is not far from here. I wish I could have gone down, because I love going to watch at Riviera. But I was really keen on seeing how Joaquin Neiman handled. Here he had a 4-5 shot lead, you know, wire to wire he had the lead. And now how is he going to deal? And I forgot that he actually won once. So that.
Right. He won at the Greenbrier.
At the Greenbrier.
A couple years ago, but he was so young. He's still young, 23.
23.
And to have been in the lead wire to wire and maintain that lead mentally, as we've talked about, it was so difficult, yet he was so solid. The guy is just extraordinary.
Yeah, I was very impressed. I was really curious to see how he'd handle it. And whoa, he was solid and very impressive. Yeah, I think he's got quite a future, that that kid.
Well, you kind of alluded to some of this, but what do you think you have learned from golf that carries over to your day-to-day life?
Yeah, I did touch upon that already. And I think it's, you know, it's like, it's a whole journey, just like life, you know. And then a lot of times you think something is a negative, but then you realize when you look back at it that it was a positive, or that it was part of the growth, you know, it was part of the necessary learning process. And I think golf teaches you that a lot too. And, you know, because it's a game of mistakes, you know, so you have to learn from those mistakes and not, you know, let it bring you down too much, and to be in the moment, you know, which enacting I have to do. And in life, I probably don't do it as much as I should. And golf, you need to be in that moment too. So there's so many lessons, you know. I think I named a few, and then if I had a little more time, you know, to think about it, or in the middle of a round, I'd probably come up with four or five other ones. But like I talked about, dealing with, you know, adversity and bad breaks that happen to you in a round, and the pressure that you might feel, whether it's, even though it's just a friendly game, you know, you still feel the pressure. Or if you're competing against your own, oh, I have a chance to, you know, have one of my best rounds, and then you feel the pressure, and how do you deal with that, you know? And it's an interesting, like I said, a representation of how you handle things in life. So
it really is. I know the comparisons are just endless. Let's talk about your musical career, Don, because you've gone from pop to swing. I know you've made appearances around the country with an orchestra. Such variety also in your musical career.
Yeah, I mean, the music that I really love performing is, you know, the Great American Songbook with a real jazz feel, you know, kind of like the Sinatra Songbook and Nat King Cole and, you know, Dino and Bobby Darin, I was a huge fan of. So I love that, you know, all those great jazz standards and swing. I've done it with the big, you know, great big band in different places. With the Orlando Jazz Orchestra, I did something at Full Sail, a venue that you're probably familiar with.
Sure.
And I have some video. People could go, if they go on YouTube and look up my name, Donnie Most with Full Sail, you'll see some video from that performance. It was a really great venue and a wonderful orchestra. And I did a symphony with the Hershey Symphony in Pennsylvania back in November, which was my first time with a symphony orchestra, which was amazing. And a lot of other theaters and jazz clubs around the country. And I have a CD that's out called D-Most, Mostly Swinging, and with a great big band of LA jazz musicians. And I'm heading to Nashville in a couple of weeks to finish a new CD.
Let's keep in touch.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure reconnecting with you, and hope to see you sometime soon.
Don Most. My thanks to Mark Canizero of the New York Post, to actor, director, singer Don Most, to My Good Sound Production, and Delaney Hefner in the studio. And during this Women's History Month, remember this quote from Coco Chanel: "A girl can be two things, who and what she wants." Have a great weekend, and I'll talk with you next week on Sports Interview with Anne Liguori.